Hi, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I'm giving you a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I'm joined by my co-host, Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are chatting with author Bridget Kemmerer. Did I say that right?
Hi, how are you? Yes, you did. Perfect. Nailed it on the first try.
Well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Bridget Kemmerer is the New York Times bestselling author of dark and alluring YA novels like A Curse So Dark and Lonely, Defy the Night, and Letters to the Lost. I think that was multiple titles, but I just ran them on. So. A full-time writer, Bridget lives in the Baltimore area with her family. When she's not writing or being a mom, you can usually find her with her hands wrapped around a barbell. Well, before we talk Warrior Princess Assassin, let's get to know you a little bit.
Sure.
So, what made you push publish that first time?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. You know, for me personally, I have always loved books. I've always loved storytelling. I was very much a bookish kid. You know, my dad always had a little bit of wanderlust. We moved a lot when I was growing up, so books were kind of always my constant friend. Mm-hmm. And so I just always kind of fell in love with books and storytelling. I started writing short stories when I was young. You know, I still remember doing it when I was in middle school, in high school. I used to get in trouble for writing. I still have this fond memory of getting in trouble in math class. Even though I loved math, I got in trouble for, you know, writing, like hiding my stories under my math textbook. And it wasn't until I was, you know, really in my like late 20s that my husband, you know, said, hey, you know, you're writing these stories all the time. Are you ever going to really do anything with them? That I really started kind of looking into what it takes to get published. And I found out that what it takes is years of rejection. Honestly, and, you know, just kind of kept chasing that dream until I eventually got there.
So why YA? Like, we will talk about the transition, but why did you choose YA to start with?
So I have always loved young adult literature. And it's funny, when I was first pursuing publication, you know, I was trying to find a literary agent. The novel that my very first literary agent signed me with was actually an adult paranormal romance. So I was originally writing in the adult space, and I had kind of toyed with the idea of writing in the YA space. I've always loved YA. I love that it's just very immediate. I love teenagers. You know, when I worked in finance, you know, during my career, but I also taught horseback riding lessons like all through my teens and then well into my 20s. So I've always like worked with kids and love kids, especially like that middle school and high school age range. And so it's just, I just love it. You know, there's something about storytelling for that age where everything is like right now and the emotional intensity is just high. And I remember my first book, after I finally found an agent, my first book didn't sell, and I had this idea and I went back to the drawing board and started writing it, and I just kind of fell in love with it. And that was a YA novel, and that's kind of where I sat for like 18 more books.
So if there's a piece of advice that present author you could give past author you, what would it be?
Oh man, you know, so it's so funny. This question is always so hard for me because I'm the kind of person who's always like, no, you have to learn from the experience you get, right? Yeah. And I'm like, no, I wouldn't give you any advice. Drink more water, younger Bridget. Drink more water.
Fair.
Get more sleep. You know, learn from the experience you get, and that's what got you here. No, I mean, honestly, if it would be anything, I would say listen to your instincts a little sooner. Mm-hmm. You know, if looking back, you know, I could see a lot of choices where I, you know, especially as far as the business side of publishing, that there were decisions that I made that I kind of saw them early on. But, you know, whether it was, I mean, really, this could apply to anything, but where I wanted to make a decision, but either I didn't want to hurt someone's feelings, or I didn't want someone to think I was rude, or I, you know, didn't want anybody to think I was being too aggressive or too assertive, or really basically I was falling into the woman trap in business, and I waited, and I should have just done what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I feel like that happens like across the board though. Like it's
for sure.
Very, like there are so many people who find it really hard to advocate for themselves and what they want and what they need.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's
Yeah.
fair life advice in general. So,
That my daughter is 11 and she's very quiet unless she feels comfortable in a comfortable situation. I always tell her teachers, like going in, she's going into sixth grade. So like we still do like the whole thing. I'm like, Nora will not advocate for herself. So please try and like get her to do those things. And her teachers last year when we started, they're like, okay. But by the end of the year, they're like, she actually is asking for help. Not all the time,
that's
but like we
awesome.
recognize that she's doing. I'm like, that is the one thing that I'm trying to teach her is to add, like, I know you are quiet. I know you don't want to like speak up for yourself, but advocate for yourself because it's very important to learn it now. Like, so you can speak for yourself when you're an adult.
Yeah, it's so true. And it's so hard, especially for women.
It
Yeah.
is. Well, because there's such a stigma against like a woman being confident. Like, then we're bitches. And it's like, it's very frustrating.
Yeah, for sure.
So, can you share any writing rituals or habits that help you stay focused and productive during your process?
So for me, I am very much somebody who does that Pomodoro method, you know, where
Okay.
you write for 20 minutes and then like kind of take a break. And I was working on probably my last YA novel that was under contract, which is Sparking Fire Out of Fate, which comes out in January. And I was really struggling to get that one done for a variety of reasons, just timing and kids and life and family. And I would do these kind of writing sprints on social media. And people out on social media kept being like, you know, hey, thanks to the algorithm, like, you know, I don't see these until like the next day or hours later. You know, I'd be like, hey, does anybody want to sprint with me for 20 minutes? And people would be like, it's 8 hours later, like, you know,
You're
whatever.
like, sure, but can
Yes.
you do it now?
And people kept asking me to set up a Discord. And I was like, okay, I am 47 years old. Like, I belong to a couple Discords, but the idea of setting up a Discord was like, sure, you can totally set up a Discord.
You're
So I was
like,
like,
let me get one of my kids to do that
I
for
was like,
me.
let me, hey, 18-year-old, can you help your mom? And so I set up a Discord and I truly thought like 10 people would join. And like 1,000 people joined. And this Discord has become, and it is open to all, and that's the only reason I'm talking about it on a podcast. Feel free to message me. It is called Missed Deadlines. Anybody is welcome, any aspiring writers are welcome to join. Indie, trad, aspiring, journaling, whatever you're doing, anyone is welcome to join. It has been wonderful, and it is all about productivity. There's no drama. Like, we are really here to work, and it's amazing because people all over the globe are on there. So people would jump in and just do these writing sprints and say, hey, let's sprint for 20 minutes. And you're just doing it alongside other people. And I swear my productivity has increased since this Discord started. And it's not because of me. It's almost like this community just kind of came together. It's been amazing.
Well, and we talked to so many different authors who talk about how being an author is such an isolating career because I mean, it's typically it's one person. Sometimes you have a co-writer or it's a writing duo. And so every once in a while you'll get like it's not as isolating, but it's like a lot of times you're doing it on your own. Like you think of the ideas and you might have a team that helps you, but it would be hard to stay focused and motivated when like it's just you for the most part.
For sure. Yeah, no, it can be really challenging. So, no, I love it. I love that it's come together and that's kind of become really a big part of my process.
So, are you a planner or are you a pantser?
So, in the very beginning, I was definitely a pantser. I have definitely not come all the way over to the planner side. I'm very much a discovery writer. I like to figure things out as I go along, but you know, in publishing, in order for them to, you know, write you a check and offer you a contract,
You
they
gotta have
kind
an
of want to know what's
idea.
going to happen. So, you know, I've gotten pretty good at figuring out the major plot points of what's going to happen. So I do have, and it does help me to write, to kind of know where I'm going to go, to have a rough outline of what's going to happen.
So, how you as a writer, like in that discovery writing aspect, do you like balance the development of like the relationships in the story versus the other elements?
So for me, I am not afraid to get it wrong as I'm writing, you know, and sometimes I'll put it on the page and the characters might get together a little too early, or maybe they're not getting together fast enough, Or maybe there's a little too much intimacy too early. You know, for example, in Warrior Princess Assassin, there's one scene like right at the dead center of the book where all of the characters are in an inn. And that one chapter, there's one chapter where a lot of truths start to get revealed. I'm trying not to be spoilery, but there's a lot of truths start to get revealed. And that chapter kind of went through probably more revision than any other chapter in the book, because the first time I wrote it, you know, it ended in a really intimate way. And then the second time I wrote it, it ended in a really angry way. And then the third time I wrote it, it ended in a lot more, you know, because the second time I wrote it, it ended where like everybody was at odds and nobody was getting along. And I was like, well, that's still not quite right. And then kind of came around again. And then we were back to being intimate, but still a little too intimate. Like I, like the, and not intimate as in sexual, but still
Emotionally
romantic.
intimate, yeah.
And it wasn't earned yet. Like we needed to sit in the discomfort. And then I finally got to where it was now. And I think sometimes people, you know, we are so trained from the beginning to want to get that A, like to get it right. Like school teaches us, like, get the A, right? And I think with writing, you have to kind of let that go and be like, it's okay. You can get it wrong. You can get it wrong. You can go back and fix it later.
That's what delete is for.
Exactly.
I like I'm as you were saying that, I'm like trying to go through like the scenarios, like how different the book would be, like with all of those different like versions of that scene.
Well,
Because
and I
it
can
like
tell
that
you,
would
so
change like the trajectory of
yeah,
like the whole story, especially if
it really,
they had ended it like everybody was angry, like how different like the next like three or four scenes would be.
yes, you know, and I'll tell you the like in the first rendition, since you know what happens in the scene, and like in the very first rendition, it had ended with Asher and Jori like kissing in front of Kai, in front of the warrior. And then that didn't really work. And then the second rendition, you know, everybody ended up really angry, like really. And I was like, oh no, that's there's just too much anger. Like we can't reel it back in from here. Like it just that wasn't working at all. And then the third rendition, there was still a kiss, but it still didn't feel earned. Like it didn't work. And then the fourth time around is where we ended up. And I like where we ended up.
Yeah, that's a very pivotal scene for how they interact going forward. So
Yes.
I can't imagine it being any different. Like I'm hearing you say it, but I'm like, the way it ended up was perfect.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, it definitely it's pivotal and it like changes the relationship with everybody around them too. Like it doesn't just
Yes.
affect the three of them, it affects everybody that is traveling with them. And I think I'm kind of stuck on like imagining like where everything would be going with the like...
Do your characters talk to you, or are you one of those authors where they say like this is how I want it to go, or are you very much steering the ship here?
So it's funny, with my main characters, I'm generally steering the ship, but it's the side characters that will come in and like just throw things. Just, I don't know, just throw me off course completely. Yeah, it's usually the side characters that just kind of step in and just are like, no, sorry, this is different now.
Those characters that your readers are like, when are they getting the book?
Yes, exactly.
So Susan Stoker has this running joke in like the world of publishing that if you're going to name a character, you have to be ready to write their book.
It's true. You know, that's great.
Because it never fails. She's like, I'll just put like a random character in, and she's like, and then I get a, like 100 people being like, so where's this book gonna happen, and when can I have it? She's like,
Yes.
oh, that was a mistake. But then they end up usually getting a book because she does those kinds of things for us. So do you have a favorite trope or subgenre even that you like to read?
So I do generally love enemies to lovers. I am, you know, your typical romanticy reader. Like I really just do. I just do. I love it. I do love romanticy. I love contemporary romance. You know, I just love a good, you know, I don't know, Hallmark romance. You know, like the you know, the veterinarian who, you know, has his little shop by the seashore, and, you know,
by the seashore.
the big city girl has to come back to, you know, clean out her dad's attic or whatever. Like, you know, I just love them. I love them. I love
Sometimes
them.
You need that.
Yeah.
We
yeah,
like to absolutely. Refer to those ones as like mac and cheese.
Yes.
Because it's just like, you know what's going to happen, but everything's, it's not easy, but it's easy at the same time. And it just is like very calming. Like there's not a lot of angst. It's just, those are our mac and cheese breeds.
Yes. Love it. Love it.
So let's dive into Warrior Princess Assassin. It came out August 12th, 2025. It is in the romantasy world, and it's going to be a trilogy, correct?
So they signed on for 3 books. I think it could possibly go for more, but yes, for now, they signed on for a trilogy.
Oh, more.
We'll see. I mean, again, that's up to readers, so we'll see.
So what was the inspiration for this trilogy?
So for this one, I had this really, really vivid idea or this image in my head of a princess sitting in bed, being visited by an assassin who was her best friend. Okay. And it was the middle of the night. And it was just so clear to me that she was like just sitting in bed and he was coming through the window. There was this moonlight shining in and she was just waiting for him and they were not lovers. Okay. But it was very clear that he was very much a gentleman, that, you know, nothing could ever happen between them. And she was very upset because she knew that the next day she was going to have to marry this man that she did not want to meet. And obviously, you know, this seems like your typical romantasy trope, but these three characters just in my head would not leave me alone. She was afraid to marry this king, did not want to marry him. The assassin was coming to tell her, like, you know, I can help you escape. Just couldn't stop thinking about them. Mm-hmm. And I knew, like in my head, I was like, you know, there needs to be more of a plot than these three characters. And then it occurred to me, I was like, oh, all right. He is going to tell her that he has been assigned to kill the man she is about to marry. And he has been assigned to kill her.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, oh my.
Yes. Yeah. And he's, you know, and because they're best friends, instead of being like, you know, so then he's like, all right, what should we do about it? Right. And then, you know, once I had that in my head, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with these characters? And I couldn't stop thinking about it. Could not. And anytime I have a new idea like that, you know, then I start kind of like populating the world and like, what could, you know, what could, why must she marry this king? Like then the king starts coming to life in my head. The princess is coming to life. The assassin's coming to life. And I don't tell anyone. And because there's this phase of like creating a story in your head where if you mention it to somebody and they like look at you the wrong way, like that could just kill it. You just kill it. Right. Like, even if you tell, you know, you're just like, oh, all right, I guess it's dead. Like, you don't like it. It's stupid. Like, right.
Thank you.
Right. It's like telling your 5-year-old that you don't like their makeup. Like, it's just the defeat. Right. It's like, oh, okay. I guess I won't write it at all. Right. And so I didn't tell anybody for the longest time.
Okay.
And I'm really good friends. And this always sounds like such a name drop. And I don't mean it that way, but I'm good friends with Jodi Picou. And she loves romanticy and loves sexy romanticy, like filthy sexy romanticy, which I was not prepared to write. But and she kept being like, Bridget, when are you going to write me some filthy sex? And I was like, Jodi, back off. No, I was like, write your own fan fiction, Jodi. And but finally one day she was teasing me about that. And I was like, finally, I had to tell somebody. And I was like, well, wait until I pitch you my idea for this polyamorous romance. And she was like, wait, what? And I was like, yes. And then I pitched her the whole thing about the princess and the assassin and this, you know, warrior king. And she was like, you have to write it right now. And that was the reaction that like I really needed. Mm-hmm. And I fell in love with it from that moment. And I had to write it.
Well, yeah, I'm happy you're writing it.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I messaged Leah as soon as I finished it. I was like, oh, you need to read this like Yay! Right now.
Yay. Oh, I'm so glad. Thanks.
Well, and that's one of those things. So like Amanda's our resident romanticy expert on the podcast. Like I have read a small smattering. Like, it's not my go-to, but anytime Amanda's like, you really need to read this one, I will read it, because like
Yay.
she reads them all and she's like, yeah, don't read this one. This one's okay. You may like, it's not, might not be up for you, but she's like, this one, yes. And there's just something about the way you tell their story and the way that you create these characters and their backstories. And like I was telling Amanda before you came on, I was like, when we first meet Jory, like I honestly did not think I was going to like her at all. I thought she was going to be this simpering dummy who had no like brain. And I was like, but I love her. Like, I was pleasantly
Yay!
surprised, because it's like when you come into stories like this and you like it's a sheltered princess, like you never know what you're going to expect. And sometimes they are the too stupid to live type of character. And then they kind of like come into their own,
Grow.
which so by the end, you sometimes like them, sometimes you don't. It just happens. But like, I was so shocked to see like the way that you created her character from the get-go, because I was like, oh, I was not anticipating anything like the sass, the attitude, the reaction in the first interaction with Kai. Like, it just was not what I was expecting, but in the best ways.
Hey, thanks. Yeah, she was so much fun to write. I really loved Jory's character.
We lost her, so we're gonna hold on just a second, see if she comes back. We'll just keep recording, because then when she pops back in, we can just keep on pick right
Yeah.
up. I hate technology
I
sometimes.
know, right?
Like, I figure if anybody's gonna do it, it's gonna be me.
Yeah, I was like having problems earlier, so.
Right, what'd she say?
Is that she didn't know what happened? Hold on one second.
Okay. Mike's gonna have a big chunk to take out.
Right.
She can leave and then come back in, right?
I think so.
Oh, there
Oh,
you
here we
are.
go. Hope we can see you. I don't know.
All right, hold on. Let me see if I can get.
Okay, we can hear you too now, so.
Hold on. Can you hear me?
We
Yep.
can.
Oh, I can't hear you though. All right, hold on.
Okay.
Right, say something now.
Something now.
Don't
Know what. That's so weird. That has never happened.
If can you unplug your head if you unplug and then plug back in your headphones, as I'm like miming.
Right. You hear us now?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
We can hear you. Can you hear us?
I can now hear you. Okay,
Okay.
so sorry. And hopefully you
No,
can.
it's fine. Like, you disappeared, like you were talking, and then you were like gone, and we're like, oh.
Oh. I don't know what happened. So I will say, so while I was gone, my 14-year-old loves to use my office because he likes to game and use like my nice microphone and my nice headphones. And I am wondering if using my headphones, like something shorted because like I touched the cord and like everything shorted out.
Oh.
Oh no.
So anyway, we'll be having a conversation later. And
Anyway, we were talking about Jory and how
Anyway.
awesome she is.
Yes.
Jory was a tremendous. Hopefully, you can edit all that out. I'm really
Oh,
sorry.
yes. We
Okay,
have a guy
fabulous.
for that.
I'm so sorry. Anyway, Dory was a tremendous amount of fun for me to write. And really, all three of these characters are, dealing with a different type of trauma, right? And,
Yes.
Jory's, I feel like hopefully is really relatable to a lot of women, where it's almost like this invisible trauma where she is just kind of beaten down by the men in her life and just kind of pushed to the side, very hidden, very like, we're just going to handle everything. You just need to stay out of the way. And she's just kind of used to taking it. She doesn't want to take it, but she doesn't really have any other option. And it was a lot of fun to write the different ways that both Asher and Kai treat her, because of course they obviously
Yes.
both treat her with respect, but in very different ways. So no, I love Jory, and I love when readers love Jory too.
Well, and the whole invisible side of it, like we get this in like what the first like 15 pages of the book where she, like her brother comes in and like he talks about how like the marriage contract and things like that, and she's like, "You never talk to me about it. Like you never ask me my opinion. Like I'm the princess. Like I should have input." And he's basically like, "No, like you're not important."
Yes. And her brother's just kind of a dick. Like,
Oh yeah.
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 I like how they all interact with each other because the standout thing to me was they provide each other with exactly what they need in every way. I had posted my review and somebody was like, "Is it a love triangle?" And I said, "No, I keep calling it a love circle because it just like they just like they feed into each other so much." And it was so well done. Like I had such a good time and I like them all so much. Like I was so emotionally invested in what happens to all three of them. And I don't think that they would have been the same without each other as a whole.
Yay.
So I'm really
Well, and like when
obsessed with this
we,
book.
like with Asher, when we learn about his background and what happened when, because we find out that he was banished from like the kingdom and like what he went through and how he has survived and became the assassin and things like that, and just his journey and like the healing aspect that these Kai, especially, like he's always kind of had Jory there, like as kind of his escape from his reality, but the healing side that Kai is giving him in like little snippets as like this first book progresses is just it's really interesting to me the choices that you made like to get these characters to the end of book one, which like Amanda and I were saying, like you end us on a cliffy, but not a cliffy at the same time. It's almost like when you're growing up and it's like the 6-hour movie and you come to the end of the VHS and you have to pause to eject and put the new VHS in. It's just like this continuation. Like there's not like a pause, like there's a pause in the story where it's like paused at a good point, but like, and yes, I am dying for the next one, but at the same time, it's not like I'm not emotionally like frustrated. I am, but I'm not.
What I did, people keep asking me if it's a cliffhanger, and I'm like, it's not a cliffhanger because I feel like the story is resolved, but there's definitely a very clear open door into the next book. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like their story isn't over, but like if this was all we got, then I mean, I wouldn't be content with that, but I would be content at the same
Like
time.
no, yeah, no, nobody's like no, nobody feels unresolved. Like nobody's left feeling like, well, now the story's not. Yeah.
Yeah, it's
Yeah, it
like we
wasn't
got a
like.
part one to a story that is fully developed, and then we're gonna move to part two. Like,
Yeah. Like I said, the
yes.
second VHS tape.
Yes,
Yes,
yes.
exactly. And yes, I am aging myself there.
That's right. We can do it together. I get it.
Yes.
Like, honestly, like I'll bring stuff up and my kids are like, "What is that?" I'm like, "You tell me I'm old. Just think about that." So When is book two coming? Because you said you have a book coming out in January, and I know trad schedules are a little bit more chaotic than an indie schedule. So book two for this, when is that happening?
So I'm drafting it right now.
Okay.
We don't have an official pub date yet because so it hasn't been announced. I had a conversation with my editor yesterday. We are hopeful for fourth quarter of 2026.
Okay.
And but I can't promise that, but that's what we're hopeful for.
Okay. A ways away, but I will be
We will be waiting.
impatiently waiting for it.
But we
So
understand.
we do understand. So what is actually next for you?
So I have another series with Bloomsbury, which is my YA series that started with Forging Silver into Stars. The
Okay.
last book is Sparking Fire Out of Fate, and that's the one that comes out in January. I
Okay.
believe it's January 26th. And I'm really excited. It's the conclusion to that trilogy, so I can't wait for readers to read that one. And then it'll be the final, and then again, I'm writing the sequel to Warrior Princess Assassin, and I'm really having a good time writing it. I cannot wait because I know readers still have a lot of questions about like Kai's sister and whether or
Yes.
not, you know,
Yes.
everything we learn about both Jory's kingdom and the mysterious kingdom of Dragonus, about whether or not, you know, those kinds of things are true and more about their magic and the origin of Kai's magic. And just, I'm having a great time writing it.
Yes, I'm very excited for more on the magic. Like I'm intrigued.
I am really intrigued as well, and it's like as I'm reading, I'm like, is Jory gonna have like a secret magic that we don't know about?
Not going to say
Yeah, she can't tell us. So
I
we
know
just
you
have all
can't
these
tell,
theories.
but
We
I
have all
have
these theories.
theories. But I do really love like the supporting cast of characters too, like Callum and like all of those guys, like Sev, and I like Charlotte, but yeah. I won't say anything more than that. Yeah, there's.
I had a lot of fun writing the supporting cast and especially Kai's soldiers. They were so much fun to write.
Yeah, they bring like a lightness, 'cause like with Asher and just Jory and Kai in general, like there's such a heavy like umbrella over them because of like the situations that they're in, but then like the side characters, they bring like a lightness to it that we need, and it like levels out the whole story, at least for me it does.
Yeah, I
Yay.
agree. I saw today that you had that it's on Spotify for Audible Premium. I
It
haven't listened to
is.
the audio yet, but I saw the narrators
I
were
was listening to
Teddy.
like the snippet that you had posted,
Yeah.
and I was like, oh, I'm gonna have to listen to
It's
this.
really good. Yes, because it does. It has Teddy Hamilton and Renee. Oh, I'm blanking.
Abigail Romero, I think it
Oh, Abigail.
starts.
Yes, Abigail Romero and
Erin Shedlock.
Aaron, yes, and there's
Ooh,
it's
I love
so
when Teddy and
good.
Aaron blend. They have like their voices and cadences, like they match so well. I have not listened to Abigail, so I don't know what she sounds, or maybe I have and I just don't realize it. But I love me some Teddy, but I love me some Aaron too. So the two of them together.
They did such
Yes.
a good job, and they did a really good job of like doing each other's voice, like when they're
Oh,
reading
yeah.
each other's. Like so because Teddy does Asher and Aaron
Aaron
does
is Kai.
and does Kai, and when they read each other's dialogue they like do it in the other's voice, and I was like, wow, that's really impressive.
Oh wow,
I
yeah, I'm definitely gonna have to grab this.
I am excited to hear that. Like, 'cause I like to reread an audio 'cause I can have it on as background noise, but I'm all over that.
Yeah, I'm excited. I just saw that today. I was like, yay.
No, it was. It was on because when I somebody had to tell me because I didn't realize it was in the Spotify Premium, and I was like, "Ooh, that's awesome!" So, yeah,
Yes, and the book is on Kindle Unlimited as well, which is
it is. Yes,
amazing. So for
nice.
all of you Kindle Unlimited readers, you should definitely pick this one up.
For sure.
So was somebody, Amanda said that you had to ask me anything, and somebody in that had like asked about how this is spicier than your other books. Was that a hard transition for you?
So, you know, when I write YA, it's funny because a lot of people have made the comment, they're like, oh, Bridget Kemmerer really grew up and you know, and I'm like,
Random.
I guess it's funny to me
You're
because
like,
I'm
I've
like,
been a grown up for a while now.
the whole time, my entire publishing career, I have been a grown up. You know, but I, when I was writing YA, you know, I truly was writing for teenagers. I took it very, very seriously that I was writing for teenagers. I spent a lot of time really thinking about, you know, the language that I was using. I knew that I had readers, you know, as young as 11 and 12 years old. I was very careful about, you know, anytime I had any kind of intimacy on the page that I was writing it. You know, I really didn't even have very much
Age
intimacy,
appropriate.
but yes, but also very much, I would write scenes in a way that, like, if you know, you know,
But if you don't
if
know,
you're 11, you did not know. Yeah. And, but, you know, writing this book, I very much had a period of transition where I was like, can I use that word? Like, am I allowed to say that? Is that okay? That's the C word. I can't use the C word. Like, is that all right? And really, even when I finally sent the manuscript off to my editor, I had like a week where I felt like I had drunk texted my boss or something. Like, I was like, am I allowed to do that? Is that all right?
You're like, can That's I use amazing. The grown-up words out loud?
Yes.
That's amazing. I love it. And you have your content warnings right up front
I
in
do,
the book for
yes.
anyone that might be concerned about any of the content. So it's right there.
Oh, it is. It's very much right there. And also, because I know, because some people had asked me, you know, because I know, like, with the with Sarah Mass's ACOTAR series, that had initially started as young adult and then moved into, you know, into adult romanticy, where the series kind of like changed way midway. This one, you know, started firmly in the adult space. So I don't think that, I mean, hopefully, crossing my fingers, I won't have, you know, bookstores or librarians like shelving this in young adult. It is very clearly labeled adult. Like you said, it has a content warning right up front that it is adult.
I mean, so, you never know what'll happen.
I mean, like you said, you never know. I'm doing my personal best.
Yes, to try you're to doing your part. Know. And then whatever my thing is if you don't know what your kids are reading, that is your own fault.
I mean,
that's my theory on it, at least.
Well, it was funny. I had, when I did the little ask me anything on Instagram, I had a couple people where I was like, oh, you sound like a child. Because there were several questions where it was like, is it okay for a 12-year-old to read this? And I was like, I'm not going to answer that one because I feel like you're asking permission. Like, so I made sure I like grabbed the ones where it was like, what age is this for? So yeah.
You're like, I'm not telling you yes, but I'm not telling you no either.
Yeah.
Because I mean, I know me, like at 12, 13, I was reading things that I had no business reading. But hey.
Oh, for sure. And I'm never going to, you know, I don't want to parent anybody else's kid. You know what I mean? And there are definitely like, you know, I very much have like a open door policy for my kids. I'm like, you can read anything you want and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Amanda, do you have any other questions?
No, I think we hit pretty much everything we were going to talk about. I'm very excited for more.
Yay! Thank you.
I am very excited.
And I will be diving back into the YA because I do like YA. So I want to check out your series that's going to wrap up in January. So I'll go back and read and catch up on that.
Honestly, I feel like that's if anybody has read Warrior Princess Assassin and they want to read more of mine, Forging Silver into Stars is probably my closest to Warrior Princess Assassin, as far as it's like my oldest, you know, it's closest to new adult, as far as being like romanticy. It is still YA, so there's not much like open door in there.
But it bridges that gap a little bit more.
It does take place in the Cursebreaker universe. So in the same world as A Curse So Dark and Lonely, but you absolutely do not need to read that trilogy to understand it.
Perfect.
So yes. You're a big fan of the trilogy.
I mean, that's just such a thing in the YA space.
This is true.
Yeah. So I'm excited.
I'm writing these things down.
She's writing. She's like, this is what I'm going to go grab on my Kindle when we get off.
Well, but
here.
Like the fact that, like, I think that my girl might. He might enjoy them. She's kind of picky. I will fully admit that one. And so, like, fantasy isn't always her thing, but she might enjoy these ones.
Yeah, my nephews too. So,
oh, awesome!
My boy will not. He does not like to read books.
Sometimes it's tough.
He's a gamer.
Oh,
he likes to play Warhammer. So he does get his nerd out that way.
But hey,
that's cool.
Whatever works.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Bridget, so much for joining us and answering
thank you
all the things.
Yes, this was amazing.
You so much.
And until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.